You're in the Warum. My name is Vince Negro. Welcome to the program. Hope everyone's doing well out there. All good on our end. Today on our one-on-one series, we have a very special guest, Alok Mukherjee.
Okay.
Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Mr. Mukherjee?
Yes.
Mr. Mukherjee, I have seen around the Toronto scene many, many years. We may or may not have run into each other, but Mr. Mukherjee was the chairman of the Police Services Board for roughly 10 years.
About 10 and a half.
10 and a half years. You've seen a lot of people come and go, a lot of mayors. We're going to get into that, a lot to unpack. You know, and obviously we're going to talk about your book, Excessive Force, which I finished reading about a week ago. You know, what's interesting about the book, and we'll talk about it in the second half, is that it was almost like a history lesson for me because I was able to relate to a lot of the people in a lot of the instances because we tend to forget as time goes on, but a lot of those events really kind of structured where Toronto is today. One of the things that we talked about, that you talked about in the book that you highlight, is the G20 summit. Bill Blair was the chief at the time.
Yes.
And there is a lot of controversy how he handled it, how he didn't handle it. Was it a blemish on the city of Toronto? Most people would say it was.
Yes.
Was that a turning point in the force, do you believe? And tell us your experience with the G20.
Yeah. It is a blemish on the city. As I mentioned in the book,
right.
G20 will remain in the history of policing as the event when the highest number of civilians were detained in peacetime in Canada. And the type of force that got used in what was considered to be, or what was guaranteed to be, a place for free expression of dissent and protest will remain a dark spot.
Dark spot.
Yes. It cost the police board and the police service tens of millions of dollars in settling class action. It cost reputational
damage.
Significant reputational damage. And we were not prepared for the things that happened. I mean, the event was imposed on the city by the then Prime Minister. There was general agreement that Metro Convention Center was not the ideal spot for holding
right.
this major event that draws leaders from all over the world. And we all knew, based on G20s elsewhere, that there's always public protests and demonstrations and so on. The city did not have a lot of time to plan for it. So some estimates were made in terms of how many people may be detained. I think the estimate was a few hundred maybe, and basically they'd come in, they'd get documented, and they'll be let go. Nobody imagined the kind of chaos that would happen in the detention center that was built.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor, David Miller, was mayor at that time, and I had met with press from all over the world who had come to visit the city.
Right.
And we had claimed to them that we have a culture in this city of free speech, and the police will not only make it happen, but will facilitate it. We designated Queen's Park as the place where people could engage in free speech.
Free speech.
And the public understood that to mean that they will not be interfered with as long as they were peaceful and lawful.
Yeah.
The policing arrangements turned out not to have been ideal, because we had police officers come from all over the country, accustomed to policing in very different ways. As it turned out, there was no good training to build them as teams. So some police forces are more accustomed to using force, others are more accustomed to dealing with protests.
Right.
Anyway, all of that came together, and as we learned, the board did not receive full information on the basis that the board did not have any right to receive operational information. So we were basically being told that all arrangements were going well, and that the police was ready for managing this multiple day event, until the day of the when the meetings began. And it turned out that the police was far from ready.
Far from ready.
Yes.
Yeah, because I still have images of lots of the police pushing people off of Spadina Road and stuff.
The assaults that happened in Queen's Park. I mean, yes, there was some violence on the, as we know, on College Street.
Yes.
Some people tried to, set fire to the stores and cause some rioting. But the police response was disproportionate to the extent of the threat. So at the end of it, the day after G20 ended, the impression we received was that things had gone not too badly. That was the report that both the city council and the board received from the chief, until the media started publishing images of injured people, assaulted people, and numbers of people detained began to come out.
They come out.
And also information about how there was a total breakdown in the detention process. I proposed to my board that we need to have an independent look at governance of G20 preparations. And so we brought in the retired Associate Chief Justice of Ontario, John Morden, to take a look at it.
Yeah, take a look at it.
And at the same time, other agencies also began to look at it. So,
so that was a blemish. I want to talk about the book and the genesis of the book, but just one other question I got to ask you, because it's been obviously in the past couple of years, we've heard about this word defunding the police, the police with the riots that happened in the United States. And where do you stand on the whole defunding of the police?
I'd quite modestly say that we were beginning to look at that as well. Question of cost of policing before defund police movement. And, being the chair of the largest police board in the country, I was involved with discussions at the national and the provincial level with other police board chairs and members. And we were beginning to talk about the exponential growth in the cost of policing across the country. We had been able to convince the federal government, Prime Minister Harper's government, to take an interest in this issue. And the government had convened a national summit on cost of policing. They called it the economics of policing. Ontario had also held a summit on future of policing a few months after the federal. So we were talking about these things. But I think what speeded up conversations in Toronto and my own thinking was the new mayor, Mayor Ford, demanding that all city agencies, boards, commissions, departments have to cut their budget by 10%. I saw that as an opportunity. My board accepted that we will reduce the cost of policing by 10%. I was part of a delegation of police chiefs, police association members that went to England, because there the Home Secretary and later Prime Minister Theresa May had cut UK police budget by 30%. So we wanted to see how they had done it. I came back and in 2010-11 gave the board a report, or a blueprint for transforming policing. And the thinking was that arbitrarily cutting dollars will not result in permanent long-term answer. We have to rethink what we do by way of policing, what kind of resources we use, where we can use more technology, where we can use civilians, where we can use alternative methods. So defund police starts to talk about those things which we in Toronto had begun to talk about since 2010-11.
Yeah, yes. The while you were on the board, you're obviously facing all these issues, the G20, the carding, whatever. In the back of your mind, were you always saying to yourself, I'm going to have to write a book one day. Tell us a little bit how the book came about and how that came to fruition.
I didn't think much about doing a book when I was in the middle of it.
Right.
But then in 2015, when I decided 10 years is enough and Mayor Tory wants to take the board in another direction and he wants a different kind of board chair. And it was time for me to step away. And then I started to reflect on what had happened. And I realized that much of the writing about policing is either highly academic, written by professors, or memoirs of police chiefs. But there is no book, not just in Canada, but generally, that looks at those issues from a civilian lens. And I felt that these 10 years had been quite remarkable. And seldom does somebody in my position have to tackle so many challenging issues that it would be worth, and I had a friend, a former Globe and Mail reporter. He said to me one day, you should write. I said, you know, that's exactly what I'm thinking. And as it turned out that Tim Harper from Toronto Star, he had just retired as from his busy career. He was excited about doing it with me. And it turned out to be a kind of history, part memoir.
Yeah, it's like Stephen Lewis says at the back of the book, it's a must read. I would encourage people to pick it up because if you really want to know the history of Toronto, like you give it a perspective, as you said, you know, there's biographies and there's these high-end whatever, but you gave a layman's approach to the book.
Yes.
You talked about specific important issues that were turning points in the city of Toronto.
Oh, that's right.
And how you interrelated with a lot of the politicians, because at the end of the day, it really comes down to having that relationship with the politicians.
That's right. Yeah, and those are the things that people don't get to see from outside. So we get focused on police use of force, police misconduct, police violence, but we don't have a full picture of how things happen and who does what and the very dynamic relationship in which policing happens.
So I encourage, we can talk a lot about this. I just want to ask you a couple more quick questions, and I'd love to have you come back at some point and do a little bit more of a detailed on some of the points in the book.
For sure.
Olivia Chow, today said that there's the budgetary meetings that are going on, and the police want more money. And she said today that of every $5 of tax dollars, $1 goes to the police.
That's right.
And the emergency people today are saying they need more money, they're overworked, whatever. Do you believe today, obviously the city has been growing extensively. There's a lot more people in the city. It's a lot more expensive. There's a lot more construction. It's harder to get around.
Yes.
There's all kinds of other crimes going on. The car situation, we can go on and on and on.
Yes.
So the police are asking for more money, and I think they've earmarked possibly $20 million. Where are you at? And I know that, you know, in the past we cut up budgets, but today, do you see the reason, the positive reason to give the police more money? Or could they work, or could they work more effectively with what they got?
Correct. And again, the things that I proposed to the board in 2010-11 are still the things need to be done. Transforming police is not easy. And Susan Eng tried to hold back the police budget and ran into huge
problems.
I tried to do that, and it had a significant impact on relationships with Chief Blair and the things that transpired after that. It is disappointing that police leaders think that there's only one answer to community safety needs, and that is to add more police officers. There needs to be a more systematic reflection on the things that, and the basic question that needs to be asked, what are the functions for which we need the armed uniformed police officer? What are the things that can be done equally well and maybe more effectively by using other resources? What are the things that the police can enter into collaboration and partnership with community organizations and deliver through them? If you do an analysis of what a day in the life of a police officer is like, you'll find that a small fraction of police officers' time goes into dealing with violent crimes where the use of force is required. A lot more time goes into non-violent matters. And one would say that there could be other ways to deal with them that are less expensive. But there's a huge cultural resistance from the police in seriously, I mean, they do some symbolic stuff, but they have to seriously say, we could make arrangements with this organization in the community to take care of this matter. These are things where we do not need to, I mean, let us say standing guard on at a construction site or, you know, a crime scene. Yes, we can arrange with, you know, special constables who are civilians, private security, what have you, enter into contract with them. Let them do it. It's a cash cow. But it's using uniformed police officers' time. Mental health, which is now perhaps the biggest reason for calls for service. Well, who is better able to deal with mental health? A uniformed police officer who has been trained to shoot the gun, or a mental health
expert?
Cyber crime, which is another growth area. Why wouldn't we not create a cyber crime unit made up of people who have received training in dealing with cyber issues, as opposed to giving some training to a uniformed police officer and putting them? I mean,
all kinds of
my wife and I were scammed, lost several thousand dollars. I went to file a report. The police station would not even take a report because, oh, you know, it's not $50,000, it's only $6,000.
So $6,000
is a lot of money. Nobody came home to investigate. They gave me a case number, which I could use to try and get my credit card company to make a refund or something. How many people in this city, elderly people, are being scammed and there's no recourse?
No follow-up.
No follow-up. So the point is to do an analysis and say, okay, this is 40% of work that requires uniformed armed police officer. And all the rest, traffic, mental health, cybercrime, can be done in another way, cheaper way. There's this huge resistance to think that.
Anyways, Mr. Mukherjee, come to the end. I'll just add,
Mayor Chow is a dear old friend of mine from it, and I think what she's trying to do with the police budget is necessary.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, first of all, I think she's done a very good job thus far.
Absolutely.
Under all the circumstances.
Yeah.
We got to give her some time.
Absolutely.
So one thing that I like about her is that she has experience. She's been there before.
Yes.
She knows the lay of the land.
That's right.
Some people say she's maybe too progressive. I don't think she is, personally. I think we need to have a progressive mayor in a progressive city that we have right now. So I think she will get reelected.
Yes.
I think thus far she's doing a pretty good job. She's holding the line in a good way.
I saw her when Jack Nader were MPs in Ottawa, and I used to go to Ottawa as police board chair. The way she could work with her counterparts from all the political parties.
Yeah.
Was.
Yeah, she has a good style. She has a very good style.
So, we should not dismiss her as being too progressive, because she is progressive.
Oh, no.
And she is very pragmatic.
I think we need a progressive.
That's right.
I really believe we need
a
progressive.
She's very pragmatic. Right. She knows how to work collectively with people.
Listen, she got a $1 billion from the province that John Tory wasn't able to get. She got $500 million from the feds.
Yeah.
Even though it's maybe political, but she got it. I think she'll get more. But we both agree she's doing a good job.
Yes.
Again, it was a pleasure and an honor having you on the program. And I'd love to have you come back at some point.
I'd be happy to do that, Vince.
So, we're happy to have Mr. Mukherjee on our program. If you get an opportunity to get his book, Excessive Force, you can get it on Amazon. Like I got it. It's a read, but it's not only a read. It's one of those books that you have in your possession and you can always reference back and you'll always learn something new. So we hope you enjoy the program. Again, thank you, Mr. Mukherjee, for being on the program. And we'll catch you next time on The War Room.